Bush opens military airspace to the airlines for the holidays. The DOT doesn't want any part of new passenger protections. And airline employment is declining. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, November 19th, 2008. On Tuesday, President George W. Bush announced that for a second year, military airspace will be opened to civilian flights through the holiday season, and that the program will expand this year to the Midwest, the Southwest, and the West Coast, notably including the skies over Phoenix and Los Angeles. The reaction from the industry was a collective yawn. David Castlevetter, spokesman for the Air Transport Association, told the Associated Press the move had marginal impact in 2007. Doug Church of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association dismissed the announcement as, quote, different year, same gift, it's all for show, and frankly, this show is getting quite tiresome to the American traveling public, unquote. Bush added that the DOT will move forward with slot auctions at Newark Liberty International Airport in January. Airports and airlines say they'll sue to stop those auctions, and the U.S. Government Accountability Office has ruled them illegal. The president also announced new rules to, quote, provide greater compensation for lost bags, as well as tougher penalties when airlines fail to notify travelers of hidden fees. I think that's a responsible role for government. I think it makes sense for us to, through this department, put regulation in place that stands side by side with consumers in a reasonable way, unquote. He added that those new rules should take effect next month in time for the Christmas and New Year's holidays. Overshadowed completely by the Bush announcement was another by the Department of Transportation, and it's proving disappointing to airline passenger advocates. DOT will issue a notice of proposed rulemaking to implement the recommendations of its tarmac task force. That panel's final report recommends no substantive measures be required of the airlines to mitigate lengthy strandings of passengers. At first glance, the NPRM looks promising. In its solicitation of public comments, DOT's published abstract says the rule would enhance airline passenger protections by requiring airlines to adopt contingency plans for lengthy tarmac delays and incorporate them in their contracts of carriage, and require carriers to respond to consumer problems. But on closer inspection, the measure is vague and toothless. DOT does not define what constitutes a lengthy delay, allows the airlines to write their own plans, and lets them audit their own compliance. Panel member Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org is disappointed by the DOT's proposal, but encouraged that a full-on Bill of Rights may yet be possible. Quote, Senator Obama happened to be a co-sponsor of our legislation. Senator Biden had done a press release late last year about a comprehensive passenger Bill of Rights that he would like to see passed if he were president. Rahm Emanuel, who's the new chief of staff, is a huge proponent of our passenger Bill of Rights on the House side. So there is some really good news on the horizon, not only for our airline passenger Bill of Rights, but I believe for the whole FAA modernization bill. Everything in that bill is going to be good for passengers, unquote. Kate will be our guest today on the Aero News special feature. The DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics reported Tuesday that declining airline passenger volume is being accompanied by declining employment levels within the industry. U.S. scheduled passenger airlines employed 4.5% fewer workers in September 2008 than in September 2007. It marked the third consecutive monthly year-to-year decrease in full-time equivalent employee levels and the largest year-to-year decrease since July of 2006. Employment at all the network airlines except Alaska Airlines was down. You can find more details in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. A physicist in Newport News, Virginia, has pleaded guilty to charges he illegally exported space launch technical data and defense services to the People's Republic of China and offered bribes to Chinese government officials. 68-year-old Xu Quansheng is a native of China, but is a naturalized U.S. citizen and treasurer of AMAC International, a high-tech company based in Newport News with offices in Beijing. The three counts allege that Xu provided China with assistance in the design and development of a cryogenic fueling system for space launch vehicles to be used at the heavy payload launch facility located in the southern island province of Hainan. He'll be sentenced in April and could face 10 years in prison and fines running into the millions. A federal judge has agreed with United Airlines, which over the summer charged that its pilots' union was behind a sick-out protest that the union had claimed was spontaneous. The Chicago Tribune reports the United chapter of the Airline Pilots Association and four pilots were barred from conducting activities that could disrupt normal business operations at the airlines. The ruling could leave the pilots facing steep fines. United says the sick-out cost the carrier $8 million in lost revenue and almost $4 million more in operating profit. The union has had no immediate comment. Up next on ANN, DayJet makes it official with a bankruptcy filing. A Florida crash turns out to have been a donated medical transport mission. And yes, I'm a terrorist, but no, I didn't mean to bomb that airport. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 19th. I'm Paul Plack. ANN has obtained court documents confirming that DayJet, the pioneering air taxi service, has filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The company had ceased operations on September 19th. The documents list roughly $3.3 million in assets and $3.8 million in liabilities. DayJet was the single largest customer for the Eclipse 500 Very Light Jet, and DayJet reckons it owes Eclipse about $1.2 million, with another $312,000 owed to Eclipse's training operation. Engine maker Pratt & Whitney Canada is owed about $225,000, and DayJet employees have filed claims for $260,000 in outstanding wages, salaries, and commissions. The filing had been expected. There's more to read at aero-news.net, and we'll keep you posted as more details emerge. A mission of mercy and a personal favor for a pilot's ailing friend ended in tragedy November 7th, when a Partenavia P-68C crashed during a nighttime approach to Florida's Gainesville Regional Airport in low IMC. The Gainesville Sun reported, pilot Andrew Ricciuti was killed when the plane came down in a wooded area less than a mile from runway 29. Also lost in the crash were 51-year-old Gordon Bennett Taylor and his 52-year-old wife, Barbara. NTSB reports Ricciuti had answered a late-evening phone call from Taylor, who was on an organ transplant waiting list. Taylor told the pilot a possible organ was available in Gainesville and that he'd have to get there quickly for surgery in the morning. Key West Aviation agreed to donate the costs for the plane as a favor to Ricciuti. Radar contact was lost about a mile and a quarter east of the airport at 400 feet MSL. Reported weather at the time was calm winds, visibility a quarter mile in fog, and vertical visibility 100 feet. Bilal Abdullah is a doctor with dual Iraqi and British citizenship who was arrested for attacking Glasgow Airport in a burning Jeep packed with gas canisters back in June of last year. He's in court this week, and Bloomberg reports he's made an odd combination of confession and denial. The 29-year-old Abdullah says he does consider himself a terrorist, but insisted to jurors in London on Monday he had no idea that his driver, Kafil Ahmed, was going to crash the airport's main entrance. Abdullah says he was just going to the airport that day to buy a ticket to leave the country after participating in two failed bombings in England earlier in the week. One was the infamous Piccadilly Circus nightclub car bomb made with gasoline, gas canisters, and nails, which did not go off. Abdullah told the court his driver circled Glasgow Airport with a stern, determined face, then drove into a barrier at the main terminal. He claims he repeatedly shouted, quote, "What are you doing?" His foot was on the accelerator, and he didn't respond to me at all, unquote. Abdullah says Ahmed lit a bottle and handed it to him as they sat amid gas canisters. Quote, I was engulfed literally in fire, unquote. Abdullah has admitted his failed bombs were intended to give the British public a taste of fear to protest that nation's involvement in the war in Iraq, but says the case against him is exaggerated. Quote, from day one, we said we would not kill innocent people. I did not intend to cause an explosion. These materials will not cause an explosion, only fire, unquote. Another doctor, 28-year-old Mohammed Asha, is Abdullah's co-defendant in the case. Both men have pleaded not guilty. Ahmed, the driver of the Jeep in the Glasgow airport attack, burned to death at the scene. One of the big questions in the Delta-Northwest merger has been answered. Delta Airlines has maintained a fleet comprised exclusively of Boeing aircraft. Northwest has had a mixed fleet of Boeing and Airbus. Both aircraft manufacturers were wondering whether the merger would mean more future business for Airbus or the complete loss of a customer. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports Delta CEO Richard Anderson settled that question Monday during a visit to Seattle. Quote, Delta will be an opportunistic purchaser of airplanes, and that will include both Boeing and Airbus, unquote. Then he took it a step further and said Bombardier and Embraer products could also be in the mix. Quote, given our size, the breadth of our network, and the variety of places that we fly, we will be customers for all the major suppliers, unquote. In acquiring Northwest, Delta also inherited the smaller airline's 18 firm orders for Boeing's 787 Dreamliner and options for 50 more. The 787 is about the same size as the Airbus A330, for which Northwest was already the largest customer. Anderson said the Dreamliner will be welcomed at the new Delta whenever it's finally delivered. Quote, it's a pretty remarkable airplane. Boeing has done a nice job on the innovation, but it remains to be seen when we get delivery of the airplane at this point, unquote. Regarding critics who have said the Dreamliner is too small for long-haul routes, Anderson added, quote, given the fact that we fly to 380 cities on six continents, the right-sized airplane in a market is really important in this business. Given the wide variations of markets we serve, the 787 over the long term will certainly have a role, unquote. Sikorsky reports its first CH-148 Cyclone helicopter, which is being developed for the Canadian government as a replacement for its long-serving Sea King helicopter fleet, has completed its first flight successfully at Sikorsky's Development Flight Center in Florida. The flight of the fly-by-wire craft happened on Saturday. Test pilots John Armbrust and Rick Becker hovered and conducted low-speed handling tests, including forward flights at speeds reaching 30 knots and sideward and rearward maneuvers. The CH-148 is an extension of the S-92 line and will continue to undergo increasingly demanding flight tests leading up to certification and production. Sikorsky will build 28 CH-148s for Canada. Program manager Dan Hunter says, quote, the CH-148 helicopter will be a world leader in sophistication and capability for maritime helicopters. The aircraft performed beautifully, easily achieving each maneuver attempted. We're extremely pleased, unquote. Still ahead, Hilton brings WingX technology to your iPhone. Georgia's first new airport in three decades officially opens. And Mexican dope smugglers are now trying ultralights. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, November 19th. I'm Paul Plagg. Hilton Software has announced PIC Brief, a free web-based service optimized for desktops, laptops, the Apple iPhone, and other mobile devices. PIC Brief provides pilots with up-to-the-minute METARs, TAFs, animated radar, NACO charts, VFR sectionals, IFR en route charts, and more. PIC Brief is based on Hilton's WingX technology and is compatible with all common browsers. Dr. Hilton Goldstein, company founder and CEO, adds, quote, PIC Brief complements our market-leading WingX for Windows Mobile and WingX for BlackBerry products and intelligently optimizes the user experience for iPhone and iPod Touch users. We're very excited to extend our aviation information services to desktops, iPhones, and other mobile devices, unquote. You can find a link to more info at the bottom of the text version of this story at aero-news.net. The first new airport in the state of Georgia in 33 years is now open for business. The Atlanta Business Chronicle reports the Paulding County Regional Airport, northwest of Atlanta, officially opened on Friday, but was already winning acclaim a year earlier. In 2007, the airport won the U.S. Department of Commerce's Excellence for Innovation in Economic Development Award. The design includes a 10,000-acre pod system intended to embrace commerce and industry in the region. Over the last 2 years, the state has given $3 million to Paulding County for the project through the Airport Aid Program at the Georgia Department of Transportation. Georgia Governor and active pilot Sonny Perdue remarked, quote, "Companies far and wide can now look to Paulding County for operations that require the connectivity and direct access this new airport will provide. This has truly been a team effort from our elected officials in Washington, our federal agency partners, and state and local leaders who all committed to working together to see this project complete," unquote. Workers reporting to their jobs at a vegetable farm near the town of San Luis, Arizona, made a grisly discovery Monday. Reuters reports they found the wreckage of an ultralight aircraft with the body of its deceased pilot. When officials arrived to investigate, they say they found several bundles of marijuana tied to the aircraft's frame. Border Patrol Agent Laura Boston said the pot bundles weighed 141 pounds in all. Officials say they'll conduct a full investigation, but given that San Luis is less than a mile from the U.S. border with Mexico, they think they have a pretty good idea what was going on. And finally, the 10th birthday of the International Space Station will be celebrated worldwide by its development partners tomorrow. The station is a venture of international cooperation among NASA, the Russian Federal Space Agency, the Canadian Space Agency, Japan Aerospace Exploration, and 11 members of the European Space Agency. The ISS is now the largest spacecraft ever built. Assembly began with a launch from Kazakhstan of the bus-sized Zarya module on November 20, 1998. 10 years and 29 construction missions later, the station has grown to more than 627,000 pounds and its interior volume to more than 25,000 cubic feet. That's comparable to a five-bedroom house. But unlike most five-bedroom homes, it took 10 years to get a second bathroom, which just arrived this week. I think we just figured out why there aren't more women astronauts. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org about her very frustrating year butting heads with a bunch of airline guys on the DOT's tarmac task force. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.